Yeah.
What if you own something out of this country, like let's say Costa Rica?
Okay, if you own something out of the country, normally what happens is that your will, if it is valid where you make it, it's valid in other countries. I've been involved in several international probates and appellate court. One I was involved in fact, in England, where the person here had a couple hundred thousand dollars sitting in a bank in London. She had a holographic will. Holographic will is a will that you write out all in your own handwriting, and it doesn't have to be witnessed. She had a holographic will, but it was not. It would not be valid in England. It was valid here. I gave my expert opinion that it was valid will under California law, so they said, okay, we'll accept it, and they did.
Do you recommend to have a will in both countries then?
It's not necessary, but it's not necessary, but some people think it's helpful. A will in one country to deal with your property in one country and a will in the other. It makes life a little bit simpler, but again, it's not necessary because normally the laws of most countries say if a will is valid in the country you made it, then they'll accept it. Now, somebody asked about trusts a little while ago, so I'll just go over trusts just really briefly. Think of a trust as like your own private corporation. Trusts and corporations have a lot in common. A corporation is a fictitious entity. It doesn't really exist. There's no thing that you can touch or see or feel that's a corporation. A corporation is a piece of paper that the law says, if you have this piece of paper, we'll pretend there's this entity called a corporation. Okay? A trust is the same way. There is no real thing called a trust. There's just a piece of paper. The law says if you have this paper, then we'll pretend there's this legal entity called the trust.
It's still a will. It's just basically a will, just in a different form.
Essentially, yeah. But it can be a whole lot more than a will because you have a lot more flexibility with it. But how does a trust avoid probate?
Yeah.
This is how it works. Let's think of a corporation. Okay. Let's think of a small corporation as one owner, and he's got about a dozen employees. The owner is the president of the corporation. Now, when you have a trust also has somebody just like the president. With a trust, we call him a trustee. When you have a trust, it's like having your own corporation, and you are your own president, we call you the trustee. Okay. There's this corporate president who every Thursday gets payroll checks from his secretary. He signs them so that his employees can get paid on Friday. This particular Thursday, his secretary has just put all these payroll checks on his desk. He sits down, starts to write, to sign the checks. He hasn't gotten around to doing one yet when there's a big knock on the door. He goes to answer the door, and he opens the door, and there's this bright light shining in his face. He can't see a thing. All I can do is hear a voice saying, "I'm Geraldo Rivera. Now I've got some questions for you." This guy is shocked. He's just completely surprised, shocked. He falls back in his chair, has a heart attack, and dies. A very important, serious question that has to be dealt with at this point is, can the employees get paid on time? Now, how does that happen?
I think that the secretary is the next person down, or the vice president is the next person in control.
Exactly. Vice president.
Yeah.
When the president dies, just like the president of the United States, the vice president takes over as the new president. All they have to do is notify the bank, we have a new president, he can sign the checks, and everybody gets paid on time. Okay? No lawyers, no probate courts, no nothing. Should we bring in the other table?
Sure. We probably move this.
Is there room for it?
Need some help, man.
Here, maybe?
Maybe on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
Yeah, maybe, let's do it right here.
Can we put some people right here?
Yeah.
Okay, if you're not sitting at a table, why don't we pull this back?
Yeah, why don't you come right over here? Well, maybe we can get into this. Do you wanna?
I'm fine here.
Okay. If you wanna pull up to the table here. Just watch out this way.
Yeah.
When will the next meeting be conducted, like this?
We don't have a date here yet. But we've been talking about doing another one. If people like this, then we will.
I mean, this is the only place, or?
No, I'm doing some at some other branches as well.
And where can I find out?
Well, give me a call. If you want to stay after, I'll give you my card, or you can look me up on the internet, downtoearthlawyer.com. Downtoearthlawyer.com. Now, when you have a trust, you have somebody just like the vice president. We call him a successor trustee. When you pass away, just like the president of a corporation, your successor trustee takes over as the new trustee. You don't need to call in the lawyers or the probate courts. All you need to do is have the board of directors notify the creditors, title company, whatever it is, that there's a new trustee. And that's pretty much it. There are some things that can be done. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's basically the issue.
It seems to me there's some reason that people don't have trusts. I can't remember what, but
there are a couple reasons that people don't have trusts. Number one, trusts are a little more expensive than, well, can be quite a bit more expensive.
To set up than
wills. And there's a little bureaucracy in doing that. You need to change your bank accounts, your stock accounts, into the name of the trust. See, the trust doesn't work unless it owns your stuff. The reason it works is because when you pass away, you don't own anything anymore to go through probate. The trust owns it. So you actually have to deed your property into the trust. Trust has to become the owner of that, the owner of your bank accounts. Now, of course, you're the head of your trust. You're the trustee, you're the president. You can do whatever you want to with the money and the property in your trust. You can even go to Vegas and blow it all if you want to. But legally, the trust is the owner, so that when you pass away, the trust is still there, and the successor trustee takes over and does what you want him to.
Who is the trustee?
Well, you're the first trustee, and you name who the successor trustees are.
Oh, it would be in the trust.
Yeah, you can decide that. Okay? Do you have those forms?
I've handed them out already.
Okay, was there one extra for me?
I'll print one up. I have them all out.
Okay. One is mine in the meantime?
I'm sorry?
One is mine in the meantime?
Sure. Yeah, because right now what I want you to do, I apologize there. I left some of my forms at my office when I came here, so I apologize for that. So I'll I'll try and wait, wait a little bit. What I want you to do right now is to get some scratch paper out. Don't use this right now. Get some scratch paper out. And first of all, and I want you to go through some of the things that we're going to be putting onto the will before we actually do it. So that when I first started doing the seminar, I just handed the will straight out, and people made mistakes, they had to do them over again. So let's do some of these things on scratch paper. And then you also want to get these stapled before you leave to make sure everything is done properly. Okay. At the top of the paper, write your name, the way you normally use your name, and if you have any other names that people know you by. If sometimes you use a middle initial and sometimes you don't, or that kind of thing, or if you have a maiden name, list those names. Whatever other names people may know you by. The reason for this is mostly for identification, to make sure that we've got the right person. We don't want somebody else to come in and say, oh, my mother has the same name, so I want part of that estate.
So can you just use the name on your passport or ID?
Sure.
And that would identify you. Yeah.
Well, if you use other names of people, if people
know
you by any other names, then write down those other names. If you don't, then you don't. That's okay.
Well, I have a name, but I never use it anymore.
Well, write it down just to be safe.
Oh.
Let's see. Write down the names of your children, your living children, and if you have any children who are no longer living, then write those down. Oh, one. I'm just going to do that.
Anyone else?
Thanks.
Do we have to write down the spouse?
Yes. Yeah, write down your spouse. Well, okay. If you're married or if you were previously married, write down the name of your spouse or registered domestic partner. If you're still married, then that's all you need. If for some reason you're not married anymore, if you were divorced, or if your spouse passed away, then you want to note that down too, with along with the approximate date and the place that happened. Yeah.
I'm married in the eyes of the state of California, but not in the eyes of the federal government.
Domestic partner?
No, actually, I'm married in
California.
Oh, I see.
We're going based on California law, so.
What if I had a domestic partner unregistered?
If it was not registered, then you don't need to worry about it.
Even if that person might come forward and say, well, we were domestic partners, and there's nothing saying that we're not anymore, therefore I'm entitled.
If you think it might be a problem, it couldn't hurt to write it down and say the domestic partnership was dissolved and where and when. Okay?
If you're living together, you're not less.
No. This is just for legal spouses and legal domestic partners. Now, you do know, or you should know, that if you're not married to somebody and you would like to, but you're over 62 and you want to save the Social Security, one of the benefits of the federal government not recognizing domestic partnerships is that you can be a domestic partner in California if one of you is over 62 and still not be married in the eyes of federal government so you don't lose your Social Security. Okay, so everybody's written down their spouse and their kids. Yeah.
Sorry, you mean you can register as a domestic partner?
You can, yes. If one of you is over 62, you can have heterosexual domestic partnerships in California.
You write down the birth of your children and your...
The, The birth dates, yes. And if you have children who are no longer alive, then when they pass away. And again, this is mostly for identification to make sure that the wrong person doesn't come along and try and claim part of your stuff. Okay, everybody done with that? Okay, next one I'd like you to write down is where you want your personal effects to go. Personal effects are... this is all on scratch paper.
Okay.
If you need any more scratch paper, I think there may be some more available.
Yeah.
There are also a couple of notepads that I pass around. People want to just tear a piece out.
Okay. The next thing I want you to do is to figure out where you want your personal effects to go. Personal effects meaning, you know, your jewelry, your books, your household things, your clothing, your car. You can say to my kids equally, or you can say this thing goes to that kid, and this, that other thing goes to this other kid, and everything else gets divided. There are all sorts of ways of doing it. You can do it the way you want to, but I want you to mark that down. And think of the phrase, and even write this down, if he survives me, if he doesn't survive me, then. So you want to make a gift to somebody if he survives me, and if he doesn't survive me, that means if he dies before you do, then what do you want to have happen with that stuff?
Wouldn't you just make a new will if your partner, if your spouse dies? I mean,
you could, but what I want to try and do is to take that into consideration so that you don't need to worry about it. Okay. Everybody done with that? Anybody still working? Okay. Now what I want you to do is to think of where you'd like everything else to go. Everything else we call the residuary estate. And you can make individual gifts. The way I prefer to do it is with percentages. Because if you make an individual gift, like if you've got a ton of money now and you say, okay, I want to give $50,000 to this person and everything else goes to my kids, because you think your kids are going to get more, but when you die for some reason you don't have much, this person's going to get the first $50,000 and your kids may not get anything. So personally, I like to use percentages or shares. If you have three kids, one-third each, or half to this one and one quarter to those two, however you want to do that.
You would give the precise amount of money that you're giving them.
No, I recommend against doing that. You can, yeah. Because you have to, there should be one clause in here that says, whatever else I have, after everything else, this is where it goes. Okay. If you give a precise amount of money or a precise thing. Like if you have $500,000 sitting in your bank and you have a house and you give your house to one of your kids and say the rest goes to your other child and your money is gone when you die, then that one child is going to get your house and the other one's going to get nothing. So you don't want that to happen. Yeah.
Seems like it's listing the people, the individuals, and both of these that get the gifts, and then it asks at the bottom, have made X number of gifts instead of X number of people.
Right. Well, the reason that's on the form is to make sure somebody else doesn't come in and write his own name in there. And you might want to make more than one gift to a person. You might want to say, my art collection to George, my antiques to Sally, and that would be two gifts, and then everything else gets equally split between George and Sally, so that would be three different gifts. That was only two people.
What if you just use, like it says, everything? You know,
then that's only one.
Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, my spouse, if deceased, my children, 50%, George, 50%. That's really three people, and it just assumes everything from your paragraph.
The purpose is to make sure that somebody doesn't come along and write his own name. So what you could do, the way that I would probably do it, and we'll get into this in a few minutes, the way that I would probably do it is to say, number one, this thing, number two, that thing, number three, that thing, and you would number them, and then down below you'd write that number so that somebody doesn't come along later and say, number four, give it to me. Okay, it doesn't have to be precise, it doesn't have to be exact, but it has to be clear that that's what you're doing. Everybody done with that? The next thing you need to do is to figure out who you want to be your executor, who you want to handle your stuff in probate. You can have one person or you can have more than one person. They can be people who were named in your will. They can be your kids. They can be relatives. They can be anybody. You can but here's a phrase that you should write down in case you wanted to change this, or you can have alternatives. If he is both able and willing, but if he is either unable or unwilling then. So you want to name somebody, or maybe two people, to do it jointly. And then you have to figure out what happens if one of them is not available or if both of them are not available. Who would you like to have handle your process? Okay, you should have at least one alternative.
Yeah, probably, I'm probably going to need my things to my nieces and nephews, but let's pretend here, if I probably have a trustee, and this is myself, the second trustee would be my best friend, but my best friend's my age, probably it's not a good idea to have someone your same age, am I right?
It happens a lot. You never know. It couldn't hurt to start with that if that's what you think is appropriate. I was involved in a probate last year where the executor was 85. So you never know. But if you do that, you should have an alternative. By the way, if you're married, your spouse can be your executor. And that's a really good idea to make your spouse your first executor. Yeah.
Can you have who's going or what's going to whom or anything? Can you have a clause that says that you don't want someone to have it for sure?
Yes.
In case something happens.
Yeah. The question is, can you make sure that somebody doesn't get anything from your state? And you can do that. What you say is, when you make your gifts, you say, my cousin Flora will get nothing by this will. And because what happens is, as I said before, if you have some property that for some reason isn't designated where it goes, or if the law thinks this person should get something, if you leave some property to some of your nieces and nephews and not others, the court might think, oh, maybe they forgot that they had these other nieces and nephews, so we're going to give them a share too. It's a good idea to say, no, these nieces and nephews I'm leaving in, but these other ones I don't want to get anything, just because there's a possibility the court might want to give them something. They might think you forgot. Yeah.
Where would you put that on
the form? You put that in the same place that you put the gifts. So you'd say, this to Madeline, this to George, and number three, nothing to my cousin Sarah. Yeah.
So are you saying in an executed will, designating certain parties, and other parties are not that drawn, that they have a legal right to contest the will?
The question is, if you designate some people to take under your will and you don't designate others, can the people not designated sometimes get something under your will? Sometimes. It's rare, but it happens. And so if you have relatives who you don't want definitely don't want to have something under your will. It's a good idea, especially if they're close relatives, to name them and say, I don't want this person to get anything under my will. Especially if somebody who is who's an equally close relative is getting something. If you have kids, you don't have to name all your nieces and nephews. That's not going to be a problem. But if you don't have kids and you leave things to your nieces and nephews, and you want to leave one out, you need to mark it down.
What if you leave somebody to someone who passes before you do?
No, you don't have to rewrite your will as long as you take care of it in this will. And that's why I said you want to write down the phrase, if she shall survive, meaning if she lives longer than I do. If she doesn't survive me, then to her heirs or to whoever else you would want it to go to if she dies before you. Everybody done with that?
Sorry, I still have a question about that.
Okay.
I would like all of my estate to go to two-specific non-profits.
Okay.
And my siblings understand that. Do I still need to write them specifically out of my will?
It would be a really good idea. If you want all your property to go to a non-profit and leave your siblings out, it's a really good idea to specify that. Now, if you want to leave property to a nonprofit, you need to be really, really careful that you get the exact name of the charity or their address or something to make really sure that we get the right one. There are lots and lots and lots, there are like 50,000 registered charities out there, and a lot of them have similar names, and if you get the name a little wrong, it could end up going to the wrong place. There was a true story, absolutely true story. There was a woman a while ago, lived in Connecticut. She never was west of the Hudson. Her husband was never west of the Hudson. Her kids were never west of the Hudson. She never knew anybody out west. Nobody knew why. But she left in her will $5 million, quote, to the University of Southern California, also known as UCLA. Those two schools fought about it for years until lawyers got half of it. And then they decided, oh, okay, forget it. Let's just split it. But they spent years trying to figure out who it was that she met, and they couldn't do it. You need to be careful when you name a charity.
Well, what about the Sound Mind when you're writing this will, are there any complications with that?
If you're under a doctor's care and a doctor would say, well, he's not really with it, he doesn't know who his family is. I mean, if you know who your family is, if you know who the people who you want to give your stuff to, if you understand that, then you're of sound mind as far as the law is concerned, even though you might not be medically completely competent. For writing your will, all you have to do is understand what you have and where you want it to go. Okay. Now, you've written down who you want to have to be your executor and successor executors, perhaps. Under some circumstances, your executor may not be able to do it, may not want to do it for some reason. Do you want to give that person the power to appoint somebody else if he thinks it's a good idea? If you do, then write, yes, appoint successor. If you don't, then write, no, don't appoint successor executor. Who here has minor kids? If you have minor kids, you want to name somebody who would be the guardian of your kids. Now, there are two kinds of guardians. There's guardian of the person and guardian of the estate. The guardian of the estate is the person who's going to manage your kids' property, his money, whatever it is. guardian of the person is the person who takes him in, makes sure that he's well fed. Very often, most of the time, that's the same person. It doesn't have to be.
How do you find that person? I have a handicapped child, adult. How do you find a guardian? That's what I'm thinking about.
Well, if you don't have someone, then a court will try and find somebody. There's a person called the public guardian. The city of San Francisco hired somebody called the public guardian. They have an office that helps do things when we haven't appointed somebody to do that. In fact, remember before I was talking about the naming your executor? If you don't name an executor and a couple of people come in and say, I want to do it, and the court says, oh, no, we're not going to let either of you do that, in that one case I told you about, they appointed the public guardian. And the public guardian is going to be the person who is the executor of that estate and is going to take the fee paid for by the heirs.
Right. Okay.
Let's see.
How do you trust the public executive?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I mean,
they're supervised by the court. So, I don't know. It's best to find somebody you really trust and name that person.
Sounds better.
Sounds good. Where is that person?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I have a question. Would the executor, again, if you have a properties in two countries, would you decide one in each?
Yeah, if you have property in different countries, you might want to appoint different person in each country. It can be done. It's inconvenient to have somebody too far away be your executor. And in fact, in California, you can't have somebody who's the executor who's not, if unless they're either a U.S. citizen or U.S. resident.
So, but then you kind of recommend to have one here in California and then.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a good idea to have one here in California and one in the other country.
I'm sorry, did you already say the executor can be an heir?
Yes, the executor can be an heir.
Wouldn't a charity be able to do that? I mean, if you...
Be the executor? No, a charity?
A public a caretaker for, you know, like...
There may be some charities that are set up for that. I'm not aware of that, but if they are, then sure. Yeah.
What happens if you're married and you both die at the same time? And one does not have a will. Well, the two wills are different.
What they do if two spouses die at the same time, or actually under California law, if you die within 5 days of each other, what the law says is that each will be treated as if the other one, as if the other one died first. So. Your half will go to the way you want it to go, and her half will go the way she wants it to go.
And if there is no will?
If there's no will, then your half will go to, well, if you have kids, it'll go to your kids, and it's not a problem. If you don't have kids, then your half will go to your family, and her half will go to her family. All right. Now, we named executors. Now, executors have certain powers. If you name somebody you trust, there are three levels of powers we can give to executors. One level is to say, I don't really trust my executor that much. Before he does anything, like write a check to pay a PG&E bill, he has to go into court to get permission to do that. So basically permission, he has to go and get pre-approval for everything that he does. That's one level. The next level is that he can do whatever he thinks is necessary without getting pre-approval, except he can't sell your house or real estate. For that, he has to get pre-approval. Or the third level of power is that he can do anything that he thinks is proper without getting pre-approval, including selling your house. But of course, whatever he does, he has to justify afterwards to the judge. He has to do it properly, and he has to show a judge that he did it properly, or the judge is going to ding him. The judge is going to make him pay it back if he hasn't done it right. So the question is, do you want him to have to go get permission in advance each time? So just note which level of authority. If you don't mention any level of authority into the law, he will have the top level of authority to do whatever he thinks is proper without getting permission in advance. And the reason, one of the reasons that they did that is the courts are really crowded. That's one of the reasons probates take a long time, actually, too. In San Francisco, we have about 700,000 people, and about 800 people die every month. We have one probate judge. In LA, they have about 4 million people. They have about 5,000 people die every month. They have three probate judges. So that's one of the reasons that probate is a good idea to avoid, because sometimes it takes a while. The average probate in California takes a year or two. I was involved in one, it was very unusual. I was involved in one that they came to me when the probate had been open for 21 years. They couldn't get the lawyer to close the estate. I was able to get it closed in 6 months. But that kind of thing is rare, but it does happen. It can stretch a lot longer than 2 years. Yeah.
So if I don't say anything, my executor has full power.
Right.
If I say full authority, my executor has full power.
Right.
If I say limited authority, my executor can dispose of anything except
the house.
Except the house.
Yeah.
Anything else. Car, property.
Right. But again, that's without pre-approval. Of course, he has to get he has to get approval afterwards from the court and show that he did it properly.
Okay. No authority?
No authority means he has to basically go back into court to do whatever he wanted. Well, that's a little drastic. Not quite, but close. Yeah.
So limited authority means getting permission from the judge in the court?
Yes.
When you say the executor has full authority, still that person is carrying out your will.
The
I
person
mean, not
that,
selling
right.
your car and taking the money.
That's right.
Selling
the,
your
yeah.
car and distributing the money.
Right.
Heirs,
right. Right. If the person has full authority, he still has to carry out your wishes and establish to the judge afterwards that he did that. Of course, nothing's going to get distributed to the heirs until there's a court order and the executor proves that he paid all the bills and did everything properly and didn't steal anything. Okay. And finally, under California law, unless you specify otherwise, your executor is required to get a fidelity bond. A fidelity bond is an insurance policy that protects your heirs against the executor stealing their money. The problem is that they pay for it. Your kids pay for that insurance policy. Do you want? So the question is, do you need your executor to get that insurance policy? If you trust your executor enough not to steal your stuff and do what's best for your kids, you might want to waive that.
Well, if your kids are the executor.
Sorry?
If the kids are the executor.
If the kids are the executor, then they'll steal from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't need to go through that.
Yeah.
Well, so if you're appointing somebody who you're not quite so sure about, you might want to make them get that bond, even if your kids have to end up paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Is it expensive?
Depends on the size of the estate, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. It depends. The lowest I've seen for smaller estates is about $1,000. But depending on the size of the estate, it'll go up if the estate's larger. Okay, any questions about any of this? Sorry?
The name of that bond?
It's called a fidelity bond. In the will, I just refer to it as a bond. And you can either waive the bond or not.
This is a one-time $1,000 fee, or is this $1,000 a year?
Per year. The hope is that the probate will be able to get closed within a year. It doesn't always do that. Okay. Any questions about that? Any questions about any of this so far?
So what's the cost of the probate?
In California, let's see. In California, we have a thing called statutory fees. lawyers and executors get statutory fees. Statutory fees in California generally, not always, but generally are 2% plus $3,000. So if you have a $100,000 estate, your executor will get $5,000. If you have a $1 million estate, your executor will get $23,000. Your executor and your lawyer will each get that amount.
Say that amount again.
2% plus $3,000. There are some minor fees. There's a court filing fee of about $400. In probate, you have to get somebody called a probate referee to appraise all your property, and they charge 0.1%.
And that's probably fair because the person who's the executor has a heck of a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the probate fees in California are a lot less than they are in some other places. In Florida, statutory fees are 4%, flat 4% for the executor, and 7% for the lawyer.
Does it have to be a lawyer?
Do you have to have a lawyer? No, you don't legally have to have a lawyer. It's usually a good idea. I've seen lawyers screw up probates. So it's a good idea to have a lawyer who knows what he's talking about, because it can get a little complicated.
The state doesn't.
Say, no, law does not require. Yeah.
And if my estate is under $100,000, all of that, there won't be
any probate. Yeah, if your estate's under $100,000, there won't be a probate, but you still need a will.
And there will be no probate fees for
it. Right. Now, even if your estate's under $100,000, if your heirs fight about it, it might have to go to probate to sort it out. But if they don't fight about it, yeah, if everything you have is under $100,000, you don't need to go to probate.
My executor can execute it without a payment.
What happens is that your executor has to get permission from all the heirs, or all the heirs just get together and put together an affidavit saying, you know, we're entitled to all the property, give it to us.
And they don't need a lawyer,
Technically, no. It might be a good idea to have a lawyer draft up that affidavit, but that's minor. Okay. I'm going to go through. Okay, let's see. Okay. Now remember, these are phrases to use in your will if you want to give something to people equally. Share and share alike is a good phrase to use. You can say the word equally, but the courts like it better if you do this. Again, if he survives me, this is who gets my property. If he doesn't survive me, then, meaning if he dies before I do, then this is who gets it. These are things that you're going to need to use. And for your fiduciaries, your executor and the guardian, if you need it. If he is both willing and able to serve, but if he is either unwilling or unable to serve, then here's the other person. Okay, everybody all set?
Better to be redundant. For example, if he is willing and able to serve, okay, if not, then.
Yeah.
Can you say it that way?
Yeah, you can say it that way. Well, yeah. Yeah. As long as it's clear.
Okay, as long as it's clear.
That's really what we're going for.
Okay.
We want to avoid any kind of ambiguity. Okay, everybody done with that? Okay. So I'm gonna go through this quickly and show you what it looks like. And then I'll let you guys fill this out. And if you have questions as you form it, I'll let you. Okay. The first part, last will and testament of, this is where you put your names and your AKAs. And you put your regular name, what the name you normally use at the top. And you put it here as well, where you live, the town you live in. Your other names that you're known as, and how many AKAs you have. we don't want somebody filling in some other name saying, oh, he was also Paul Smith, and I'm Paul Smith's son, so I want part of the estate. Statement of the family, you say if you're married or not, if you are, who your spouse or registered domestic partner is. If you're not married, either you've never been married or had a domestic partner, or if you were, the name of that person. Sorry?
Go back a little bit. You put I am, put your name of,
I.
Of San Francisco.
Of what town you live in.
Okay.
Okay, we're trying to identify you to make sure that we don't get the wrong person. Oops. You put down how, if you're married, if you were married more than once, then you can fill it out appropriately. If you were married once and divorced and you're married again, then you can fill it out appropriately. If you were married and divorced or your spouse passed away, you want to put the place and the date approximately where you were divorced or where the spouse passed away. This is where you put your children, and just list your children and their birth dates again to make sure that we have the right people. And you want to write down the number of children you have so somebody else doesn't come along, write his own name in there, and say, I'm one of the kids too. And then initial the first page. You want to initial each page on the bottom next to the page number. You do the same thing if you have children who are deceased. If you don't, just write none and zero. Disposition of property, this is personal effects, paragraph 4, 2.1, yeah.
Okay, so in the number of gifts, if I would say to leave everything to somebody, but then say, oh, well, if she predeceases me, then it's going to go to these two people.
Yeah.
Is that still one gift, or is that now three?
I would put it down as two gifts. I would number it, say number one, to Joyce if she survives me, two, if she doesn't survive me. Mostly it's, as long as you make it really clear what you're talking about, so that somebody else can't come along later and write in, you know, number five, give me some too.
But if you start getting elaborate, saying, well, that Picasso over the mantle is for Joe, and then you start listing all the various, I mean, really getting, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it's not, well, the estate that was open for 21 years, that estate was like that. Gee,
wow.
$50 to this person, and $50 to that person, and this face to this. And the lawyer looked at this list that was like 40 pages long and thought, oh, God, this is such a headache. I don't want to deal with it. So you can make some gifts like that, but my advice is not to make too many. Yeah?
I have two daughters, and they like
Yeah, you can do that. Absolutely.
Share and share,
share, and share alike, and then they'll decide.
Okay.
Can you say something about funeral expenses? You know, since someone in your family may have to deal with it.
Your funeral, your estate is legally responsible for your funeral expenses. So if somebody else pays for that, then they can get reimbursed by the estate.
By the estate.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be specified.
So they would take. What about someone who has to make the arrangements?
Same thing.
Is that the executor?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. The executor is only appointed after your will is sent into probate, and that's often after the funeral.
Also, how do you specify a certain person or?
You know, that's not something you really specify in the will. It's just whoever the family appoints for. I mean, it can be if there is nobody to sort of take that on spontaneously, it'll usually be the executive.
So you just have to make personal contact while you're still living.
Yeah.
Okay. Are those funeral insurance worthwhile?
Funeral insurance?
Yeah, they say you have to pay $7,000 to $9,000. That sort of thing.
Probably not. If you get a deal where you pay a certain amount now, and no matter what it's going to cost in the future, they'll guarantee to bury you.
Yeah.
That's okay. But if they just give you a set amount of money, in 10 years it might be more and it might not be enough.
Yeah.
So
interest rate.
Yeah. So I mean, normally regular life insurance is a much better deal than these specialized insurances because they're more expensive.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you request that things be destroyed?
Can you request things be destroyed?
Mm. Like you have writings or you have things that are private and you want to have in your life, but destroy them in your day.
You can request that.
The computer has to.
They're not legally bound to do that.
Oh, really? So you can request that the most trustworthy person you know in charge of that?
Well, what you would do is you would leave that to the most trustworthy person you know and tell them you want it destroyed.
Got it.
So that nobody else will get their grubby hands on it. Residuary estate, same kind of thing. You could say everything to my spouse if she survives me, if she doesn't survive me, to my kids. That's a typical way to do it.
Huge.
And then again, the number of gifts that you've made.
In that case, sorry, but you can also say, okay, can you say to this person, and then after part of his death, going somewhere else, and you specify that?
Well, you can't give somebody something to somebody and say he can use it until he dies and then it goes to somebody else. You can do that with a trust. You can't do that with a will. If you give something to somebody, it's a completed gift, and it's over. He's got control of it.
But you can do that with a will trust.
You can do that with a trust.
Oh, you can do trust.
Not with a will. Now, one of the things about having a trust is that most non-English-speaking countries, if you have property in other countries, non-English-speaking countries normally don't recognize trusts.
Mm.
So that's a little downside. What we've done in situations like that is, if there's enough money involved or enough property, setting up a corporation and having the trust own the stock of the corporation. So so as far as the other country is concerned, it's just a corporation that owns it. And we can get around it that way.
How about, is there anything special for pets? Is there anything special you need to do for your pets?
For pets? Well, it depends on what you want to do for your pets. So if you have $12 million like Leona Helmsley did, you can set up a trust for your pet. The normal thing to do would be to give your pet to somebody that you want, and if you want to, in addition, give some money to take care of the pet. Let's see, fiduciaries. Here's where you appoint your executor. You appoint an executor here, you appoint alternative executors here.
You appoint two executors?
At the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can. Now, if you do that, what you should do is say, decide whether it has to be both of them, or if one of them doesn't want to do it, if the other one can do it. If that's okay, you'd want to say George and Sam, or whichever is both willing and able to do so. If neither is willing and able, then a third person. If it has to be both George and Sam, not either one individually, then you'd say George and Sam, if both are willing and able. But if either one is not willing or able, then Martha.
The personal effects
are just generally small things, the things you have around the house. The residuary estate just means everything else. So that's one of the reasons I like percentages with residuary estate, because you want to make sure that you give everything away, and residuary just means everything. So if you give if you say my house goes here and my bank